Welcome to this fourth in a series about young adults with complex medical conditions transitioning from pediatric to adult medical care. This interview with mother and daughter, Alexis and Sarah Snyder, explores the evolving relationship of a dynamic duo. To make plans about Sarah with Sarah, Sarah has to know her body well and communicate what she knows and what she doesn't know. Sarah was very clear that she values her mom's health and well-being. My interviewing and sound editing skills have also evolved. I know I'm only fair at this new medium, yet it's gratifying to learn and to grow. I have links to the previous podcasts in this series in the show notes. I've appreciated many of your comments and suggestions. I've heard from many longtime blog followers and new podcast listeners. Keep that feedback coming. I also appreciate the support I've gotten from the Podcasting Fellowship alumni. Okay, here's the podcast. Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this.
Hi.
Hello.
One of the things that you said, Alexis, that was very interesting to me and that was new to my understanding, you talked about that whole cascade. It isn't like there's a pediatric to adult transition. There's many transitions. So I wanted to talk with you both about that. Sarah, from your point of view, the first time that you were realizing that there's something happening in your life that's different from other kids, what happened then in relationship to your relationship with your mother? Does that make sense?
Kind of. Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Well, I know that between grades, like moving up every year in elementary school was a bigger, ordeal for me and for my family to help me so that I have what I need at school. Other than just the other kids, they just show up to school the first day and they're like, oh, you're my teacher, cool. But like a lot more planning would go into like my education, knowing who my teacher is, making sure everything's set up.
Okay. And you were seeing that you became aware that your mother was engineering stuff on your behalf.
Yes.
Okay. And so, Alexis, for you, the recognition that Sarah's getting that something's happening, because I assume mm-hmm. that you'd been doing this already.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like all of a sudden you started managing things, but there was this moment where Sarah recognized that you were managing things.
Hmm. Do I have a recollection of when she realized that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. If I have a particular memory of a point where she was aware that we were quote unquote engineering things for her, I think for a while when she speaks about elementary school years and starting to realize that not everybody's mother went in 2 or 3 days before school to sit down with her teacher for an hour or two and go over specific medical needs or pieces of invisible illness or her education, what would be different about her education that the teacher needed to be aware of. if I had to pick a point, and Sarah can tell me if I'm right or wrong, or to back up, I would think that in the beginning, I don't even think I recognize it as being too different. It was kind of, well, this is my child and this is what I need to do to make sure she's safe during the day at school and that teachers understand what's happening. I would say if I picked a point for Sarah that she started to realize it was when we transitioned maybe to second or third grade and we had a new principal and we had a new temporary school building as well to deal with after having been used to another building for 3 years. An old building with lots more obstacles, different spacing from the elevator, more stairs, and dealing with the new physical space and the new principal. I think Sarah started to realize the more meetings we had over that, and then some meetings over obstacles with some of the PE teachers, the physical education teachers. I think that might have been a turning point where it went from play at gym with friends and fun and being able to control how much she could do or not do to a more organized physical education class and having to be more on demand of what the teachers wanted and having kind of struggles balancing and having PE teachers understand and maybe not follow what her accommodation plan said.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember multiple meetings in multiple places, and I think Sarah might have started to realize it then, because I remember at one point her asking to be involved in one of the meetings, and they really don't let you be involved in educational meetings at school until you're 14.
Interesting.
Oh,
yeah, and I think that might have been, at least in my mind, a turning point that, oh, well, someone's doing something different for me.
Mm-hmm. When I think about my own mother, it's like the things that sort of stand out for me are being really annoyed with her. You know, like my mother was a refugee from Europe, a Holocaust mm-hmm. survivor, and she was not a normal mother to me. You know, she was like very weird. And so my memories often are about being aware of how weird she was. Or for you, Sarah, was the becoming aware like sort of a grading thing? She's doing something. I don't have the control that I want, or whatever it is she's doing is annoying me, or
I think like in the moment it was annoying because whenever we'd have to go on field trips, she would come so that she could help me and make sure that I'm not getting too hot or too mm-hmm. cold or making sure that I'm conserving my energy. But then now looking back on that, because I had a pretty terrible field trip in middle school that ended with me crying and being very excluded from the rest of the group, I think that was when I was, oh, well, if my mom wasn't here right now, like, what would actually be happening? It would be even worse. So now that I look back, I'm kind of thankful that she was always there. But, like, in the moment, I was like, God, Mom, why are you here? I just want to be with my friends.
What's interesting for me, before she started talking about that, I started to have another kind of aha moment of when do I think she realized things were different, and that's a great example. And before Sarah started speaking, I was thinking about just the difference in how she gets around. You know, so many kids are using the train independently or walking back and forth to each other's houses. And it's kind of like, God, my mom always has to take me somewhere, or my dad, you know, who's also very involved, but mom is the one who does more usually, because mom has more time to do it. And I think, and you can ask Sarah more about that, but I think that's another point. I don't know what age that was where she really started to feel it more, but I think as other parents stopped driving their kids around as much mm-hmm. and they independently went to each other's houses or met up at Starbucks or whatever, whatever Sarah does, most of the time we're still dropping and picking up mm-hmm. to make it easier. Right?
Yeah, but that doesn't really bother me because it's like kind of nice that I don't have to like walk somewhere. But like it goes both ways though. It's nice that like I can just be like, hey, can you bring me to so and so's house? But then it's also, oh, well, everyone else is just walking there or something. But like,
right.
Over time, you have to figure out what works best for you, and it's not always what works best for everyone.
Well, what about after school at a young age, at elementary school? Like the middle school years, but we're in a K-8 system, so maybe like around 5th or 6th grade, where people would start making their own plans to get together at the end of the day, but because they walked home and they could walk home together. But your mom was always sitting outside waiting for you.
True, yeah.
And then you'd have to come say, well, can I go to so-and-so's house? Or always having to kind of be involved in the planning, no spontaneous planning on your side.
That's true. I wasn't thinking about that.
Well, good. I'm glad it didn't bother her the way that
no,
I think it might have.
I think the thing that bothered me about, like, me getting around places was not just you driving me, just even when I'm out walking, I'm usually in a wheelchair or something of the sort. And that was what bothered me more, but that, like, doesn't have anything to do with you. So I guess that's, like, not really important.
Well, they probably did at a younger age on field trips and things when you weren't independently pushing a wheelchair.
Oh, yeah, that's
and somebody needed to push it.
I'm hearing a couple of things. One is that early on, it's about school as opposed to the doctor or the hospital or something. And there's something about 14 with making plans with the school that you may have wanted to include Sarah in the planning process, but that wasn't allowed until she was 14.
Right.
So let's start with that second one first. So were you aware that your mom was making plans about you without you?
Yeah, but I never really considered it like without me because she was doing it for me. She was just the person to advocate it for me because I legally couldn't do it for myself and I probably, as like a little 6-year-old or whatever, I couldn't properly say what I needed.
So when 14 happened, were you like then part of the conversation with the school?
Well, 14 was when we were planning the big transition to high school. And I was involved with that. But it was mostly because it took so much time to make sure everything would be in place for when it was time for me to go to high school that my parents would be doing it, like, while I was at school or whatever. But that didn't bother me because I knew it had to get done to make sure that I wasn't gonna, like, sink when I got to school.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
You have something on your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about the transition to high school. And while it was never like, okay, now Sarah's 14 while in middle school, that she was invited by school officials, so to speak, to an IEP meeting or a 504 accommodation planning meeting. She still was never at the table.
What's IOP?
Oh, IEP, an individual education plan.
Okay.
Which at this point she had not been on any longer and, has ever since and still has a 504, which is more about accommodations than changes to the educational process,
okay.
But ways you are accommodated to be successful in the educational process.
Okay.
Those transition meetings in 8th grade to 9th grade for high school was a big transition in a lot of ways. Because the K to 8 system, even though you were 14, still really wasn't involving you.
Mm-hmm.
But the folks at the high school
really
have been so terrific that although there's a lot of behind the scenes work where I speak with people one on one or I and or my husband and I go to a meeting with school officials, all of the meetings we've had at high school have been somewhat informal And they have always invited Sarah into the room. And she was always there in the summer leading up to starting high school. They always start with asking her what she wants, what she thinks. She's very involved now in that. Even though there's still a process where mom still needs to step in and advocate sometimes because Sarah's a teenager and learning, still in the learning process of speaking up and advocating for herself when something doesn't necessarily go right at school or medical.
See the show notes or my website for more information. To subscribe or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
So how was that going to high school and being part of it and being asked what was important to you? Was that comfortable to do? Was that hard to do?
I think at first it was exciting, I guess. I don't know the right word, but then it was also like when they'd be like, so Sarah, how do you feel? I was like, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but now say it in a way that's, what are you trying to say? But now, since I've been there for almost 2 years, I'm so comfortable with like my dean and the headmaster and way easier to communicate all around, from me to them and my parents to them, all of us to them. So.
And I think it's important to the thought I had on my mind before, too, is even from a young age when she wasn't involved formally, it's not as if I made all the decisions with school or medically without her. We're always behind the scenes kind of negotiating and talking things through at home and then bringing all those ideas, kind of deciding together what might work best, what might not work, what she needs more help with, what
Can
she needs less.
Can you give me an example of that?
So I think actually a great example is recently. So second semester of high school this year, sophomore year, Sarah's high school is a large campus with multiple buildings. And so for her first year of high school and first semester this year, she was able to stay just in the one large main building, which is big enough already that requires her to use a wheelchair to get around, although she's ambulatory, so that she can conserve her energy over the long day and get around the large building, which works out great for her. But now the second semester she's taking an elective that's in another building. And so that actually might be a piece that she feels different now too. That most of the kids just run out of their class and run over to the next building and run back. So for us, we've been thinking about this since before high school started, should she need to go to this Unified Arts building for an elective. It's not an easy process for Sarah to walk out the door and get over there, even with the wheelchair. So the electric component on her wheelchair, for example, can't be out in the rain or go through a puddle or go over a lot of rock salt and safety-wise, not really easy over ice and snow, et cetera.
Not good in the cold, not good in the extreme hot.
Right, and Sarah's not good in the extreme cold or the extreme hot. So the amount of time she's outside in those is difficult. So the weather needs to be ideal for her independently to travel between the two buildings. So we, early on, and I say we, meaning me, Sarah, my husband, school officials, mostly the three of us, trying to figure out how this was going to happen. And fortunately for us, our school is extremely accommodating. But the ideas usually have to start from us to figure that out. And so when we started advocating about, well, it's almost next semester, how are we getting Sarah back and forth? They basically said, well, what are your ideas about transport? What do you think works? And so while I could start that process with them and say, well, here's what we're thinking, that was me and Sarah sitting down and saying, well, what are we going to do? How would it work best? What if we leave the wheelchair at the nurse's office where there's a flat exit that you can walk to a vehicle and somebody drives you from point A to point B and et cetera back and forth? It was a lot of engineering behind that with what you'd think would be a simple little plan.
And so you were an integral part of that. Because you knew the lay of the land and, when did you start feeling your mother's presence at those doctor's office and thinking about what you wanted and what was important to you?
Probably around middle school, because when you're like becoming a teenager, the doctors more turn to you and be like, so how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. Or what do you think's going on in your body? And then I'd be like, whoa, I'm answering their questions now. And then like, since you're still a kid, you're not always able to articulate mm-hmm. properly what's going on.
So you mean articulate, you mean that something's going on and being able to communicate it to
yeah.
somebody that's not your mom or your dad.
Yeah.
Who don't know the language. And
yeah. So then okay. mom would like have to like,
fill in the pieces.
Yeah, fill in where I left blank.
And then so were there times when your mom would do that and you would say, no, that's not, you don't have it right, mom.
No, mom always gets it right.
Okay, all right. So.
And on top of it, with the transition mm-hmm. to the medical pieces. And I think when we were talking about educational wise, it's an overlap, right? Mm-hmm. Because we wouldn't be so involved in the educational world if it wasn't for the medical piece. So I think from an early age, Sarah's seen and having to start advocating and dealing with her medical issues because of school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that kind of forced you into thinking yeah, more about the medical pieces to advocate at school.
Mm-hmm. Because I had to know my body like in and out way before other kids did, because what I needed so I could be successful was, I guess, in a way like more important than
other people. I think anywhere in life, if we think about camp too.
That's true.
I mean, from the age of 4 till now, and this year Sarah will be a CIT at the same camp, always preparation there too because of the medical. Mm-hmm. So it's always been there.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, where it's something recreational, educational, mm-hmm. going to the doctor's office, there's always this growing up transition of advocating for yourself and your needs and being aware mm-hmm. of what you need without somebody else having to tell you. And I think even camp's a good example.
That's true.
Because the counselors have always been told what to do for you. And now it's more like, well, you need to be aware and they're there to help if you need it. Mm-hmm. So there's been a transition everywhere, like mm-hmm. we talked about before.
Now thinking ahead a little bit, you've got a couple more years of high school and you're going to be thinking about what comes next. What are you anticipating that might be the next challenge for you in your transitioning into adulthood?
Probably just figuring out what I want to do with my life in a way that it's also like, I don't know what I was just gonna say. Well,
compatible with your medical.
Yeah. Life. Yes. So that it's not too challenging for myself so that I'm like pushing myself and then I get sick.
Challenging mm-hmm. medically.
Yeah. So like finding an area of something I'm passionate about that also works around the fact that some days I'm tired or some days like I can't push myself too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So like figuring out the balance of happiness and healthiness.
Mm-hmm. And what are you anticipating, Alexis? What are you anticipating sort of next?
Well, it's funny because we talked so much about medical and educational overlapping, mm-hmm. you know, being the obstacles. And the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is a transition from high school to college or whatever program she decides, whether it be art school or music school or college after high school. That's the next big, oh wow, we're comfortable at the high school now. Everybody understands. We're in a good place. Then what? What happens when she graduates? And I think I already always think ahead to what Sarah was saying too. What will she do even after college, or even if she wanted career route straight from high school? What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
what with her, the things that she loves and her passions for music or art or whatever it might be that she wants to do in the future, how is she going to end up in a role that where she can be most successful without taxing her mm-hmm. medical system? Mm-hmm. And also the transition probably out of our house mm-hmm. around the same time. And Sarah talks a lot about going to college out of state. We don't really know what that looks like or where she'll, what she'll end up doing after graduation right now. But mm-hmm. of course, that's a big worry for me, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. I mean, mom's always kind of been the protector and the right. overseer.
And it'd be great if she would just go to BU and just be down the street.
Right, right. And actually, that's something she's considering. We were mm-hmm. a couple of schools around here that mm-hmm. she's always been interested in from a young age. Mm-hmm. But even at that, she talks about if she stays locally, mm-hmm. living on campus and living in the dorms. And mm-hmm. that's a huge transition in taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to point out that when you ask Sarah those questions right after her talking about learning to advocate and articulate herself for herself, mm-hmm. her needs, when she's answering those questions, she's saying, oh, I'm not quite sure what the right words are. And she's looking across the table at me. Did I say that right?
No,
can you help out? Can, yeah. And that's kind of the transition we've been in the medical world.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, she it tries to express herself at an appointment and she does very well. But she's still looking, you know, over her shoulder at me mm-hmm. like, is there something I missed? Did I say right. it right? Do they understand? And I think she's doing that now.
Yeah. I've told you this before, but I think whatever medical things you're dealing with, I think you're very well spoken. And you're clear about when you're not clear. You know, which that's mm-hmm. not easy. I find that's hard as an adult sometimes. I don't know. And you feel, it seems to me that you're comfortable enough with yourself to say, well, I don't really know. I think that's amazing. Maybe this is an illusion because I'm a guest in your house, but it seems like you guys have a really good relationship. I wonder, Sarah, I don't know if this is a norm. I don't know. There's thousands, millions of families who are dealing with transition. So what do you think are keys to your success here as a mother-daughter relationship? Like, why do you think, at least I'm getting the picture of that it's relatively smooth? And maybe that'll change, you know, in a couple of years when she'll become the pain in the ass she really is. But what do you attribute that it does work well? Or it works as well as it works, whatever.
Yeah. Probably on my mom's part, she's always open to be, like, helpful and, like, to help you with stuff so that you feel like you can open up about, like, hey, this happened at school today, you know, what should I do about it? Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, I'm feeling like this today, like, what should I do? Mm-hmm. Like, being able to have someone to lean on for anything so that you're able to, like, your best life, even with, like, everything else going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice. Well, one of the things that in our brief time we've known each other, you're a very good listener. And I think that's some of what you're saying is mm-hmm. that you feel like you have a place and you're respected. Is that, am I putting words in your mouth? That sounds, mm-hmm. sounds right. Well, what should I have asked you guys that I haven't?
Well, I should probably answer that last question too, right?
Thank you.
So I would say what I think contributes to we do have a very good relationship. It's not a facade. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of mother daughters at this age do a lot of fighting and a lot of door slamming and a lot of I hate you mm-hmm. and whatever. And I think it's twofold. I think part of it is because we've always had to be, or I have always had to be, somewhat more overprotective of Sarah, that part of it I feel like perhaps And I hope I'm wrong, because I don't want to all of a sudden have any I hate you and door slammings and different relationship, but sometimes in life that's inevitable with teenagers. Some of the time I think it hasn't hit yet because we're maybe a little bit behind that turning curve in a relationship because of how involved I've had to be and how much of a team we are doing things together. As a mother and daughter, we've always done a lot together. Like Sarah talked about, me always being involved in field trips at school. Mm-hmm. You know, recreationally, we do a lot. And as a family, the three of us, Sarah doesn't have any siblings, do a lot together. So I think that close relationship and spending that amount of time together mm-hmm. definitely contributed, I hope, to the positive relationship we have and the pieces that Sarah was saying, always being able to talk to me about her feelings and knowing that I was always there to step in and advocate for her if needed and always kind of be her fighter, mm-hmm. So to speak, had to have brought the relationships perhaps closer than an average mother and daughter that didn't have to deal with some other pieces.
And you're not.
Would you agree?
Yes.
Right. I think when you spend that much time with anybody mm-hmm. and somebody is supporting you, that just brings you closer together. And then obviously the other side of that for me, not just me being supportive for her, but the close relationship that I have with Sarah, because obviously I love her so dearly mm-hmm. that I worry about her health and her safety and her this and her that and want the best for her. And so that's kind of always probably pushed the relationship to be close.
One of the things, Sarah, that I asked your mom was how she took care of herself. One of the things that in our work with parents and caregivers, it's very interesting to see how common getting burned out is. So how have you seen that part for your mom, that her trying to take care of herself? So that she can, you know, live the best life possible for herself and be as supportive of you as she can be. Can you tell me anything about that?
I think my mom is a very on-the-go person. So I think partially doing work, like advocating, because doing a bunch of things kind of is something that she likes to do. But I feel like on the other hand, if she hadn't, like, didn't have to do that for me, would she actually like to do that? Would she actually have the job she has now? Mm. So it's like, I feel like on the other hand, I think she feels good knowing that she's doing stuff for me so that, like, at the end of the day, everyone's happy and safe mm-hmm. and, like, secure.
And so that stokes her fire.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, well, that's
right?
cool.
I mean, at least that's what I think.
Uh-huh. I think so. But I think Danny was also asking you more about, well, I guess you're saying, so I'm capable of kind of caring for my own needs, although I'm caring for yours, because being an on-the-go person and having to deal with so much, I just keep going? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
So it's like inertia. That's who you are. Do you ever worry about her taking care of herself? Or is that not, you're confident that she does?
Yeah, I feel like she does. Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a couple of times where I've mentioned some medical need of my own, which fortunately is, you know, very small every now and then, that I've said, oh, well, I don't have time for that right now. We have too many appointments with you.
Too much to do with, like, you.
And she'll be like, wait a second, you have to take care of yourself as well.
Oh, wow, that's
great. So right, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking more of taking care of yourself, like, going to the spa or something.
Well, that's true. I mean, those are stress relievers. I think that part of, for me, in the work that I do and that you and I have done together when we travel to DC and advocate for the larger population of folks in patient-centered care and research. I think that Sarah realizes, and correct me if I'm wrong, that that's also, even though a job that I've grown into probably out of the life that we've had together, that that's actually also a stress reliever, because I'm able to get away from the average, you know, daily grind, so to speak, at home, and focus in advocacy and empowering patients and empowering for patients in a different setting, also away from home while getting some rest and and visiting with friends and going out. I think it's both. I think there's a balance of her saying that, yeah, there's this go-getting piece, and that go-getting piece also gets me that stress-relieving piece and focusing that energy beyond our family's medical needs. Does that make sense?
It does.
It does.
Thank you. This is great. I really appreciate it. Thanks for
taking
the time.
Oh, of course.
Inspiring, yes? Sarah seems on firm footing to explore the next stages in her life. Her growing confidence builds on the mutual respect of daughter and mother. The next podcast will be for my long-term blog followers who have asked me to honor their preference for the short written form. The topic will likely be capacity building. Whatever your preferences, I will continue to offer both oral and visual formats. Follow my blog, podcast, and resources through my website. See you around the block.